Fall in love with low prices. All in the Kroger app.
Get juicy green, red, or black seedless grapes for $1.88 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for the last of our position group reviews today. And as we record this, that's somewhat important, on Thursday, February 6th at 3 p.m., the MVP is about to be awarded tonight, and we're going to discuss the QB position for the Ravens. So we'll have something to say about that, even though you'll listen to this after that's already been decided. Joining me for this is Sam Njoku. Sam, how you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me back. Wish I was returning under different circumstances, seeing as how the Ravens season is over, but definitely enjoying talking football and the most important position in this here National Football League.
Yeah, well, there's not a lot to talk about in terms of the backups here. There is some question about how the Ravens move forward in 2025, but Lamar Jackson finished his seventh season. He was healthy for the second straight year, the most important thing, that played basically the entire season, though only a few snaps for Josh Johnson and mop-up duty. The MVP tonight, are you expecting him to win?
Oh, yeah. I think it's a shoe-in based on all the awards he's already won so far. NFL AP, NFLPA, all the other different organizations have pegged him for the MVP award prior to this ceremony. So I think it's a shoe-in. And deservedly so. I think he deserves the award for the third time.
I do, too. Now, I'm looking at Polymarket, and incredibly, it is a 52-48, effectively a coin flip with a very slight advantage the wagerers there are giving to Josh Allen over Lamar. So I always wonder when that happens if there's something that they know that we don't. Now, we know we have a lot of good information, but obviously votes have been made. I mean, we're essentially betting on something that has already been determined, which is not a good thing to do, by the way, folks. If the other person has an information advantage on you, you can certainly lose that bet pretty easily. But the all pro voting in particular was very lopsided, much more lopsided than people are really saying. But Joe Burrow got 9 votes that he took away from the combination of Jackson and Allen. One of those came from Jackson, who was named on 49 out of 50 ballots, and the other 8 came from Allen. So he really would have to completely flip in terms of being dropped on the ballot further down than, second, say, on a lot of the ballots where he was named already, for this to reverse. And I'm having a really hard time understanding how that might happen.
Yeah, and if what I understand, I believe that this ballot was in the same
50 people.
The same people voting for all pro are voting for the MVP. So that just leads me to believe this is likely going to be a third MVP award for Lamar Jackson. Again, Joe Burrow, definitely, I understand the notion about putting him all pro. He had a very, very dominant season. But again, all signs are pointing to Lamar getting it. And Joe Burrow doesn't make the playoffs, so make it a little more easier for you to lean Lamar. And then the stats overwhelmingly favor Lamar over Josh Allen. So third MVP, yeah. I believe, on the way.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think obviously the unadjusted stats are very much in favor of Lamar. And then you hear things like, well, it's a narrative award. It's about big wins. It's about this. Well, the Ravens had more big wins than anybody. They were 9-3 against winning teams. The Bills were 3-3 against winning teams. But they say, no, we beat the number one seed in both conferences. Okay, that's true. And yet it's not nearly as impressive as the Ravens' record. And particularly when you adjust for the quality of opponent, it becomes no contest. And that's why the stats like DVOA, which are adjusted for opponent, show Jackson with an enormous lead over Allen in DR and his statistics that are opponent adjusted. So to me, I think the other one I hear a lot is that the the quality of the remainder of the team with the Ravens gave Lamar too much of an advantage. How do you respond to that?
No, not at all. I mean, there was the Browns game at the end, maybe, but even that statistical game for Lamar wasn't really that phenomenal to really push it over. I think that game only would be maybe something to consider, but the Texans made it to the division around the playoffs. He had games against the Steelers who have a dominant defense, always given Lamar fit. So I don't see it being that case at all.
Okay. So in terms of quality of opponent, I'm totally on the same page with you, but I was specifically referring to the quality of his teammates being much higher than Allen's. Cause that's another one the Bills want to go to. They say, well, wait a minute. He had Derrick Henry. It's obviously Derrick Henry is making Lamar a lot better.
I think Lamar is making Derrick Henry better in some aspects. And I think a lot of people need to realize the way the scheme is formed for Derrick Henry to have success. One of the reasons Derrick Henry wanted to come here is because it takes away so much pressure from Derrick Henry because of what Lamar is able to do and what Todd Monk is able to scheme up. So in that regard, I don't agree with that whatsoever. Also, James Cook is a phenomenal running back in his own right. And I think he complements Josh Allen very well. So I think, if you want to make a case, you want to argue for Josh Allen, that's one thing you can go for, the Pro Bowls and what have you. But when it comes down to the film and what we see stats-wise, these two teams are very similar in their production with their players. Of course, I'm going to take, Mark Andrews over whoever the Bills have. And I like Zay Flowers this year and all of that stuff. But, when it comes down to it, I think less about the supporting cast, more about what the players are able to do on the field. And I think Lamar shines in that right.
Right. Going back to what you said about Henry, Lamar has made every single running back a lot better in terms of success rate. And the scheme here has been outstanding. But the one constant throughout the Lamar years has been Lamar. Yeah. And he's been outrageous in terms of his ability to preside over the greatest running game in NFL history here. They were second in yards per carry in the history of the game here. Henry improved personally from a 49.3% career success rate with Tennessee to 58.8%, which was I actually was unaware of this. There's another player this year who had a higher success rate than Derrick Henry. Can you tell me who it might have been? I was shocked by this when I saw it.
I'm guessing if you're shocked, it can't be Saquon.
No, it's Bijan Robinson of Atlanta.
Whoa.
Topped 60% this year at 60.1 or 60.2%. It was actually the highest of all time. That was his. So, and he did it in like 302, 308 carries, something like that. Edgerrin James did it at 58.9% in 2005. Those are the only two higher ever in NFL. Since they've been recording this, which is about 1994, I believe, they have success rates. So incredible. But I whiffed on the Bijan things in some previous recordings. So I just wanted to put that out there for people to know that. And maybe most importantly, all six of Jackson's years as the primary starter. Okay, now it doesn't include 2018, but they were certainly great running the football as soon as he jumped in there as the starter at the end of the year. But all six of his years as a primary starter are in the 88 best yards per carry in NFL history. And three of those years are in the top seven. So that is some mighty fine, a mighty fine one run game. Ravens are one of the few teams that can really do it and do it whenever they want to.
Yeah, and look what the Eagles are able to do. I know a lot of fans are thinking, well, just running the football isn't enough, and there is some credence to that. But if you have a dominant run game, it could take you to the championship. The Philadelphia Eagles showed you that. Of course, they're complemented by a very ferocious and phenomenal defense. But I think if the Ravens are able to get their defense under control and continue on this pace, there's no reason why the Ravens aren't back to at least where they were this year come 2025.
If you're saying the divisional round, I would agree. If you're saying that the Ravens are going to be as good, I'm afraid they're probably not going to be, because you just have to regress from this. By the way, I said exactly the same thing last year. Yes. And they had the fifth best year, in the DVOA era last year, and the seventh best year this year. So they actually did run it back and were as good, mm-hmm. even with that enormous amount of turnover they had in terms of free agents. But I have a hard time believing they're going to be quite as good this year with another hefty year of free agent turnover.
I'm optimistic, man. I think they can get it done. I think the turnover isn't as, severe as it was this past year. I will say that one of the reasons why I'm a little concerned about them being able to duplicate it is because the teams around them are going to get a lot better. I think the Chiefs are going to be better next year. I think the Bills are going to start plugging in some pieces. I think the Bengals are going to be a team that's going to really focus in on their defense, even though I think they'll lose some punch with the loss of T. Higgins and maybe Trey Hendrickson, depending on what's going to happen in the offseason. But yeah, I think I'm more concerned with the teams around them being a little more better. But I'm going to be an optimist here. I think, you know, bringing Todd Monken back for another year, you know, Lamar still has that fire in him. Derrick Henry's coming back with a year under his belt with his offense. Let's see. You know, I definitely understand, you know, you can't be this great statistically for 3 years in a row, DVOA-wise. So I mean, see where you're coming.
You can't be that good for 2 years in a row. I mean, this is really the first time that any team's been this great for 2 years in a row. So, and they did, you know, it's unprecedented. So I wouldn't expect them to have 3 years in a row. It really sucks that we're talking about Kansas City going for a three-peat here now, and the Ravens have been this good for 2 years. So that's the, obviously the next hurdle, but I want to get back to what you said about Todd Monken here and Jackson's, relationship within Todd Monken's offense, because I'm very happy, by the way, Todd Monken re-signed.
Yes, very, very happy. I mean, there were some scary moments in the hiring portion of this offseason where I thought, ooh, some teams might actually go and grab this guy and get their guy. But, you know, thankfully for the Ravens and Lamar Jackson in particular, he comes back. It's a huge win for the Ravens. I think the Ravens rewarded him with an extension that befits his role with this offense, because he is by far probably the second most important guy on the team opposite Lamar Jackson. Well, maybe Derrick Henry, but I think you get my point. He's phenomenal.
He's important.
As a coach.
Yeah. The offense is still very much built around Lamar. Monken, I think, has done a wonderful job of assimilating a lot of things he had to. He came in and had a team that was very good at running the football, very good at doing certain things. He improved some of them. He kept some of the old DNA. He didn't throw the old offense out. That is always a risk, by the way, when you bring in a new coaching staff in particular. He's got oversight from Harbaugh in terms of him hiring the coaches and really demanding that DNA be kept. But it's been very impressive what Monken's been able to do.
Yeah, and some of that, you know, you mentioned it. John Harbaugh deserves some credit for that. I think he did not want to change this offense when Greg Roman left, and he wanted to get a coach that he knew could come in and kind of build upon it. So Tom Monken's done a phenomenal job of that. I think year one, we were hoping that maybe he had some, some passing attack fire, but he was really, he only had a few short months to get this offense going. So I was really looking forward to the building upon the 2023 season this year in 2024. Man, he blew it out of the water. And now I was almost convinced he was going to leave in 2025 when we first hired the guy. But now that he's back for a third year, I'm very curious to see how he begins to build. I mean, the growth was exponential in 2024. So we'll see what happens in 2025. But yeah, he's done some damage to this league, especially the division. Let's see what he does.
Really be interesting to see if Monken, who I think is kind of on a short hourglass anyway, will ever be hired as a head coach at this point. He's not a dynasty head coach, and he's 58 years old now. So when he's 59, 60, 61, is the chance of him getting hired away going to go up? Maybe, you know, somebody else has a young mobile quarterback they want to try and build an offense around. Maybe Monken is the guy, but it seems like the chance would never be better than after your guy has won two straight MVP awards and the Ravens offense has been this dominant.
Yeah, I think I think we got a Steve Spagnuolo situation over here with the Ravens, where we got a guy who's going to be here for the long haul until he decides to retire. I'm certainly okay with that, you know. But you're right. Two MVP awards, likely a third one, you know, on the way. Well, two under his belt with Todd Monken. And I just don't see, if you don't want to pick him now, when would you pick him? So I think Todd Monken, you know, be happy where you are. You know, he's going to have more and more say with this offense. I think John Harbaugh does a good job of delegating to his coordinators anyway, but you know, he is going to be a very much a focal point for this team moving forward. And there's nothing wrong with being the best offensive coordinator in the league.
Nope, nothing wrong at all. And Eric Bieniemy had that tag for a while. So, you know, why isn't he a head coach? And he was at least a younger guy. It made more sense in his case that he would have gotten a job. Let's talk about Jackson's role in this, because that's what we're really here to discuss today, is the QB. Really love the additional decision-making pre-snap. And I think part of that is Monken's doing in terms of making simpler huddle calls where they got to the line of scrimmage with a you know, an alignment and a simple call that Jackson could then swap out of easily with the additional time that he had at the line of scrimmage. We saw a lot of Jackson moving around, looking at players. I think a lot of that, some of it is communicating with the rest of the team, certainly in terms of repositioning players, but a lot of it is just him thinking through the problem himself and really trying to figure out what's going on with that defense.
Yeah, and I know we were talking about Tom Monken earlier, but I'll go back to him really quick. He challenged Lamar Jackson to be that guy. I think when Greg Roman was here, it was very, you know, singularly focused. They ran the play that was called and all of that nonsense. But this time around, Tom Monken really challenged Lamar Jackson. I think early on during his tenure, there was maybe a little bit of a, you know, back and forth with Lamar and the OC about how they were going to do that. But Tom Monken, again, did a great job of simplifying things for Lamar. He's having him grow in the offense. And then, as you saw later on this season, Lamar got so comfortable pre-snap. I mean, it was just ridiculous the way he was moving these receivers around and just, you know, dictating what happened prior to the snap. It was just, it was phenomenal. And it really helped him make his case and build his case as the best quarterback in the league.
Every year he does something significantly better. There hasn't been a year of regression, certainly, but in terms of lack of growth in some area, there's been years where statistically he's taken a step back, particularly after 2019 and you know, leading into 2023, say, you know, when he was hurt, he had a little bit of years that were not as good statistically. He had one slump in terms of throwing some interceptions, but he really honestly has made a step each year in terms of better something, whether it's working with a quarterback guru or getting more folded into the offense in a way that's comfortable for him with Monken. But done a great job each year with his, what he does to prepare himself in the offseason for the year. Some weight loss this year too.
Yeah, the weight loss was a definite topic of conversation where I thought that, you know, the potential weight loss could lead to some injury. Wasn't the case this year because he definitely stayed in the pocket for the majority of the time, at least in the early going to the season. And I wonder, you know, I got to this point with Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Okay, at what point, what are you working on in the offseason when you become this great? I mean, we've seen the maturation from year one to now year seven, year eight, and we wonder, what can he do to improve? I'm sure there's things that, of course, that he can improve upon, but man, he's becoming as serious of a weapon as there is in all of football, maybe in the history of football. So yeah, it's definitely a testament to both Lamar Jackson and the Ravens coaching staff, how he's been able to mature and grow as a quarterback.
Yeah. I've been saying for most of the year that the Lamar Henry mesh point is really the most powerful weapon in the NFL right now. It's kind of maybe cheating a little bit to have a two-player combination that's the most powerful, but they really, because of those two, they're able to maintain the outstanding run-pass balance. Other teams were doing things that were riskier to Jackson in terms of injuries before Henry got here, and that meant edge defender crashing down always on Lamar. You can do that if you don't need your larger defenders to help make a tackle on Derrick Henry. And the other teams, and we've seen, you know, TJ Watt basically and some of the Steelers edge guys, and that those are the most important because they're the in division guys, going after Henry play after play and leaving assignment football to take care of Lamar Jackson. That's a wonderful situation if you can make that happen time after time. Now, not every team will do that for you. And I always think it's kind of funny when you hear people say, well, why didn't they have more keeps out of the read option with Lamar Jackson that game? Well, it's the defense has a say in it. They actually force the keep or they force the give. And they can be very effective at it. And they can telegraph it directly. And Jackson just is not able to necessarily be a keeper if the defense is always crashing down on him.
Yeah, it's called read option for a reason. Lamar Jackson is reading the defense and then deciding where to go with the football. So, yeah, I'm 100% with you on that. And I also think, you know, this is one of the reasons why I might be in the minority here, but this is why I wanted Derrick Henry over Saquon Barkley, because I just thought that his skill set matched more with what the Ravens wanted to do with this offense. They wanted to be a bully at the line of scrimmage. They wanted to be, you know, very physical at the line of scrimmage. And I think Derrick Henry brings that. Saquon, you know, he's amazing. I mean, let's not get it twisted. He's probably going to win offensive player of the year this year. But I think what Derrick Henry does for this offense, as you mentioned, with the edge rushers, risk crashing down, speaks volumes to what they can do for this offense. It'll be very interesting in a couple of years where the Ravens go draft-wise or free agent-wise with their running back situation, because, you know, you don't have too much time left with Derrick Henry. You got to get the good while you can, Ravens, get the job done in the postseason. But I think, you know, the Ravens have a good problem right now with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, who's going to get the ball or what have you. But I think in the future, they're going to need to continue to build with getting somebody that's very dangerous in the back end to give some relief and space for Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll. Really, the entire view of running back contracts has changed. This last two free agent signings of Barkley and Henry, big year from Robinson, of course. The importance with a mobile quarterback is going to, I think, bring the position back to a certain degree. Now, it won't be as valuable because they still have shorter careers, but it will still be one where I think more of the guys who are coming up for free agent money are going to get a little bit better deals at running back, and you don't have to have these Zoom calls where all the running backs are getting together and trying to decide why they're not getting paid.
Oh yeah, it's going to be. I think it's not, again, it's a passing league still, but as you mentioned, the running backs, definitely Saquon and Derrick Henry, made these running backs a lot of money with their play, and I think moving forward there'll be some dollars associated with the running back position, but not like it was before. As you mentioned, it's not as it was. Unfortunately,
Ravens, of course, one of the few teams that can run for positive EPA per play. But as I talk about in the offensive line all the time, there's no substitute for good pass blocking. There are larger wagers on pass plays than there are run plays consistently. In fact, you can think of it, if you're in a casino, pass plays are the $100 table minimum, and the run plays are the $5 table. That's really the relationship, and maybe it's 125. You get my opinion. You get my how I'm describing this thing. But it's much more important to be a good pass blocker. It's much more important to pass the ball effectively. But the Ravens' ability to run the ball effectively, even when the opponent knows it's coming, has allowed them to be really much better at closing out games, particularly in 24, than they had been in some previous years.
Oh yeah, I mean it's. It's definitely showing on the stat line. I think a lot of Ravens fans early in the season were concerned, oh, the Ravens don't know how to close out games. They were still finding themselves. I think you got later on in the year, the Ravens knew when to put their foot on the throat of their opponent and just run the ball down and kind of end it. I think, you know, it's kind of unfair, really. And you really have to build your team around stopping the Ravens. I think the Steelers are the only team in the league until recently that were building themselves to stop this. And they kind of got away from that a little bit, but it's going to be tough to stop this when you have a team that's very effective running the football, when you have two very big linemen and Daniel Falele and Voorhees when he was active. It's a problem for defensive coordinators to deal with. And I think, you know, moving forward, I think the Ravens will continue to build upon that. They're not going to shy away from being physical. Of course, they want to get better in the passing game a little bit. I guess, how do you get better when you're quarterback has the touchdown interception ratio the way they did, but all in all, I think the Ravens are in the right place on offense, and it starts with the run game.
Much improved spread in that passing attack in particular. Great use of multiple receivers. He did have improvement in his MVP season in 23 in terms of using more receivers, and a lot of that is tied to reduced tight end targets that they had. Ravens under Roman have been highly reliant on the tight end group. They had 195 tight end targets in 22 when they were the heaviest team in basically NFL history. I don't need to go into that story again. Dropped to 110 in 23, which is a precipitous drop. And that's even though Andrews missed some time, but likely came in and played a lot. So we still wouldn't expect that kind of a drop. Back up to 138 this year. And that's one of the real stories of the Ravens, is this phenomenal two-year success throwing to the tight ends. It's been in less targets, 110 and 138, but the two-year passer rating throwing to the tight ends, 143.5. And actually, it's one of these strange things. 141.3 and 141.6 were the two individual years, but the 2 years put together are 143.5 because of the way the maximums work in the categories. I asked for people to say what had been another great pair of tight end years in a row. In 2010 and 11, Gronkowski and Hernandez is really the group that compares, and they had more targets and more total productivity, but the Ravens on a per target productivity basis are right up there at the very top.
Yeah, and I was going to mention, I think a reason for that is probably what the Patriots did very well. A lot of 12 and 13 personnel, yep. Two tight ends on the field. who you're going to guard. Do you have the linebackers to guard both? Do you have the safeties to sacrifice the run game when you have Derrick Henry barreling down? So it was a matchup nightmare for teams this year. And it's why I'm very hesitant to say, oh, well, Mark Andrews may not be back in 2025 because of, you know, the cap space and, you know, his postseason performance. I think that having him on the field is just such a weapon. Just his presence for Isaiah Likely to have success, for the Ravens to have success, for the running game to have success. I think this two tight end set is so important. And when you do decide to throw the ball with these on these tight ends, I mean, they're almost wide open because you have guys crashing down trying to stop this Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry connection, and also on the outside to try and prevent big plays to Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers. So they're a matchup nightmare, this team, and it's always fun to watch, especially on Mondays after the Sunday game, watching the film, all 22, to see how these defenses are trying, and not very well successfully trying to defend this offense.
It is. It's definitely it's a lot of fun for the Ravens to have the ball. And, you know, I guess I basically grew up as an NFL fan. Well, I grew up as an NFL fan in the 70s when the Colts had Burt Jones. So that was exciting. But reborn in with the 96 Ravens, having a great defensive team was all kinds of fun. I couldn't understand why anybody would want anything else. But then, yeah, it's a lot of fun to have a dominant one-sided offense. This offense was at its highest level since 2019. The 2019 offense, nobody else had seen it before. So it was too effective, and they scored 3.08 points per drive. They haven't reached that level again yet, despite the fact that this team is the most successful red zone team the Ravens have had. And that success was absolutely at a remarkable level. It's hard to even believe that 2 years ago in 2022, the Ravens only had a red zone percentage in the 40s. I forget whether it's 44 or 46. It's in that range. And this year they were 75.
That's amazing. And yeah. When I hear that number, I'm like, wow, 75. That's nuts. And with Greg Roman, I think he was known for having a pretty decent red zone offense. I mean, I think some of it is, again, the passing attack not being where he needed to be in the red zone, and teams were just really, let's stop Lamar Jackson. Not so much this time around. So I think the issue this year next year will be getting to the red zone more consistently, having an opportunity to put points on the board. And I think, of course, with the, Justin Tucker missing those kicks early in the year and not really getting points on the board like that, it was always an issue. But for the most part, getting to the red zone this year, next year, will be huge for them. I wonder what Eric DaCosta has planned, because I've heard some things about him potentially trying to get another big receiver. I'm not 100% sure how that comes into play, because you have Zay Flowers, you have Rashad Bateman. I still like the two tight end set. Charlie Kolar makes the three tight end set very intriguing. It's not a lot of space for another receiver to get in there, but getting to the red zone more consistently, in my opinion, will be big for 2025 going in, and we'll see how the Ravens get it done.
Deontay Johnson was his own worst enemy in terms of his behavior here. And then subsequently in Houston, validating everything the Ravens had decided about him. But in truth, I think any wide receiver who comes to Baltimore has to kind of accept the fact that the Ravens will never have a number one receiver. And I mean that by a guy who targets are forced to, who they feel like they have to use him almost like you have to have Derrick Henry carry the ball 15 times. You need to throw this guy the ball 8 times. Well, they don't have that, because they need to have Lamar Jackson be the center of every offensive decision, and whatever flexibility is necessary to maximize on a play-by-play basis, you use that based on Jackson's mobility, escapability, ability to run the football, what he creates in terms of value for Henry or whoever he's handing the ball off to, and then whoever can make space on an extended play. But he doesn't have a bunch of timing throws, which is, by the way, the one weakness in all of Lamar's game, is that he doesn't throw on schedule that much. So you're not going to have a single guy who gets those extra slant targets and those extra back shoulder targets by the sideline that Derek Mason used to pile up in a season.
Yeah, and I think Rashad Bateman struggled with that, because I think his skill set definitely leaned towards more of having a timing quarterback, having a guy there that can make those slants. But as the season progressed, he got more acclimated to dealing with Lamar Jackson, being able to extend plays, being able to maneuver in zone and get that pocket and just sit there and wait for Lamar to find him. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't think this offense will ever have a number one receiver. It doesn't really need a number one receiver, because what you're essentially doing in that regard is taking plays away from Derrick Henry, which you don't want to do.
Take him away from Lamar Jackson.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Very, very good point. So I think the Ravens would be remiss if they went that route. I think they could find a supplemental guy. I like Tylan Wallace. I like the guys they have in the room right now. If you want to build upon and get better as a team, I get it. But I think all in all, this offense is fantastic as is. Maybe, you know, make some shifting in the offensive line, make some moves there. But for the most part, this team is fantastic. Didn't get it done, unfortunately, but this offense is, I think, top notch, and maybe the defense maybe needs some tweaks, but I think all in all, this offense is where it needs to be. And the red zone offense, as you mentioned, is a huge part of their success, and I believe that should continue in 2025.
They've got some. It is always tricky to do what they want to do in terms of getting receivers. Bateman may be unhappy with his contract now. I don't really know. In terms of wanting that, there may be an extension coming after one more season. I don't think it's coming before this season. The Ravens have too much value in the contract to give up on it, and too many mouths to feed, frankly, otherwise to make that be an option. But I think the Ravens are probably going to stick with the draft as the way to find receivers, as opposed to going out and signing anybody. And that should probably include avoiding mid-range contracts on receivers too, like a $5 million deal for an Aguilar or something. It's just, it's not, I don't think it's a real value proposition. If they want to go out and get a guy who they think is a special teams ace, who's also a fourth receiver, who also can run block. I mean, basically I'm talking about Tylan Wallace, or if you think back a few years, Kelly Washington really had most of those characteristics in terms of being a guy who would be good there. I don't think they otherwise go after a receiver in free agency. I think all of the times, and my ears just ache as my eyes really ache as soon as I see the Twitter crowd jump up and talk about, yeah, make it happen, Ravens, get this number one receiver who's out there. It's not not necessary, it's really counterproductive. And I want people to, there should be some pain that people feel for having this opinion. Okay. And the first is, you got to understand what Odell Beckham did to this organization in 24 and again will do in 25, because there's still dead money left. That hurts the team, because they did a post June 1 release on him. So I believe he's still got dead money on the cap in 25. Even, I mean, that money is important. You can't just throw it away like it's a party favor. And that's what people would like to do. They want to take a 1 year view of the cap, and they want to, you know, say, you know, damn tomorrow, and we'll just go with this year. Absolutely hate that approach.
Yeah, I do too. And the Saints are a prime example of that. The Saints just ruined their cap space to kind of keep the window alive for Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. And I just thought the Ravens made a good point. I think even before Ozzie Newsome retired, as they weren't going to be that team to really sell their soul for one big shot at the championship. They were going to try and be a team that's consistently good throughout the years, keep the window open for as long as possible, and really make hard decisions with the cap if necessary. We saw it last year, and we've seen it in the past with other prominent Ravens. So I agree with you. I think the one player, and I'm just being greedy with it, that I would think would be kind of cool to have in this offense would be Deebo Samuel, if he were to find a way here, just because of what he can do with this offensive running attack. But with the way Rashad Bateman has played, with the way Zay Flowers has played this year, there's just no way he fits into this offense. So I agree with you. I think they look to the draft if they even go receiver this time around. I still think that the Ravens are pretty set at that position for real. But if they do decide to take a flyer on somebody, I don't think it'll be in the early goals of the draft. Right. I think they have some pretty important positions that they want to focus in on this year, and the receiver is definitely at the bottom of that list.
Yeah, they got 11 picks. They've got Tez Walker, who they really haven't tapped into his value yet. So it's not like there isn't some talent already on the team. They did a really good job this last year of showing, and they've done this with veteran pass rushers before at a high level, at a low level, at a kind of below the radar level. They did a good job bringing in veteran receivers and plugging and playing them, particularly in the playoffs when they needed to. Getting value out of both Sims and Miller, at a very small level, is something you wouldn't expect. And then also getting a ton of value out of Wallace, who played a lot of snaps down the stretch. I'm hoping Wallace is back and that he'd be back basically on a qualified vet contract, which would mean he'd make about $2.7 million or something. But what that they have two of those to award. Basically, they pay him the vet minimum, then they give him an extra million that doesn't count against the cap. And that creates a sticky position for that player because you have to play four consecutive years with the team in order to qualify for it. So they have two, they can give it away. And the two players, Harrison had it this year, had the only one they allowed. But the two players who I think deserve it this year are, one is Wallace, and the second is Ricard, who honestly should not make that much above it anyway. So you might as well give him $1.5 million and an extra million that doesn't cost you if you can sign him for $2.5 million.
Yeah, I think, and I've mentioned this ad nauseum this offseason, if you don't bring back Patrick Ricard, it's going to be a travesty. I would be so upset. I think the Ravens understand that they're going to bring him back, obviously. And I think that that strategy with the $1 million, actually that won't count against the cap, is a good way to kind of incentivize him to come back. So I think you're right. I would love to see Patrick Ricard back, and Tylan Wallace, a guy who I think played very well, and he should probably, you know, be brought back as well.
I think they'll both be back. Wallace is the one who scares me a little more because he could get an offer that he can't refuse, like 2 years, $8 million or somebody. Somebody could say, well, we want that in our run game. The Los Angeles Chargers are the team in both cases that would be a risk of taking these players away. But Ricard, I don't think he's even going to the Chargers because he has an endorsement empire here in Baltimore between Pizza Bolli's and Royal Farms, where he probably already makes a very good amount of money, much more than most other players have. Like, I'm not even aware what Lamar Jackson is endorsing, but there's probably something, but I don't think it's a significant portion of his total income. In the case of Ricard, I think it's a significant portion of his total earnings are what he earns from endorsements. And, you know, let's be straight about this. I think Royal Farms needs a new spokesman right now in terms of their primary guy. So Ricard makes all the sense to be it.
Yeah,
and he very well could be. Yeah, so I expect him to be the lesser risk of the two to leave.
Agreed. I think Tylan Wallace might be the guy that may go, but I would love for him to stay. Ricard's not going anywhere. I'd be in front of the castle with my picket fence, my picket sign, saying, you know, all the things about the Ravens front office that they weren't able to. So, but I think they get it done. He'll be back.
All right, let's talk about some of the themes from Lamar's seasons and 2024 season in particular. The thing that gets me about it was just how week after week there was some miraculous escape play and some, I haven't seen that before, play that he would make in terms of being outside the pocket or being inside the pocket. Wonderful, by the way, manipulation inside the pocket of being able to set up his pass blockers. I thought that was a really good thing this year.
I loved it. I think I'm glad you mentioned it. His ability, his pocket presence is phenomenal. His ability to help his offensive line with the movement within that pocket, phenomenal. So I think that was a huge part of his game this year. And I think, again, his escapability, I think Ravens fans, some are a little spoiled in the fact that what he does every day, they probably don't even bat an eye anymore when he does some things. But the rest of the national media looks at it and go, oh, wow, here's Lamar Jackson again. So we need to appreciate that. I think he's done very well for himself. He continues to excel in that regard, even though he's getting up there in years. I say that as he's only 28 years old, but, you know, his ability to be a escape artist is still second to none. So I think that will pay dividends for him in the upcoming season. But this year, wow, what a guy. I think that, was it the Bengals game where he kind of stiff-armed the guy when he was going for the second? Man, what a throw. I love those type of plays because, one, it shows that he's always thinking about what's going to happen next, and two, it shows that he's just a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah, it takes a special mindset to be a Ravens receiver under those conditions, because first of all, Lamar will wave somebody right into position, but second of all, you just got to keep running. You got to keep trying to find space and deciding. But likely on that particular play, I had a lot of difficulty. Hubbard goes to the ground, Jackson's dancing around all by that right sideline before I think it was Hendrickson finally got to him and out of bounds there, and he's just the iconic shot of Hendrickson just kneeling on the ground, just shaking his head basically after that touchdown was thrown, likely stopped two different points right by the goal line and then in the back corner of the end zone before he finally moved to the middle and caught the football. But Lamar kind of is able still to kind of tell him where to go on that, you know, 8 or 9 second play that developed.
Doing it while running for your life, and in my opinion, you're running for your life. These 300-pound guys are coming at you. Doing that, having the willingness to know how to maneuver the receivers and also escape from that pass rush is just crazy. I think it's very difficult to do, to have that mindset and that athleticism to do that. A lot of guys have the athleticism, I think. Maybe not up to the par for Lamar Jackson, but they do have the skill set to get maneuvering in the pocket, but to have that awareness to move and position your receivers to get the catches is really phenomenal and really one of the reasons why he's actually going to win that MVP award for the third time.
Right. It's putting those pieces together. It's a type of brains that you can't minimize in any way. I mean, just the ability to focus downfield is very hard. And he's got all that. As an actuary, okay, there have been multiple times when we have been lectured individually or as a group about the importance of EQ relative to IQ, okay? And it's something I find to be one of the most condescending things ever, and yet I'm probably guilty of it too in terms of valuing IQ over EQ in some ways. But Lamar Jackson, there's some other like spatial quotient that he's working with that he's just remarkable at dealing with in terms of processing a lot of information going on. And you know, all quarterbacks have to do that, but Lamar is doing it while running and extending and trying to find space where it's going to happen. It's kind of like a hockey characteristic I associated with, about, you know, knowing where you have to put your pass, where your opponent is going to be. Don't, you know, and you know, if you're a receiver, you have to skate to where the puck's going to be, not where it is now, you know, kind of thing, or not where you're not going to get it in your current position. So it's very different, and it's remarkable what he's able to do. The reading of leverage is part of it. And I've often said on this show, he's the greatest of any athlete I've ever seen, with the exception of maybe the guys he's in the same leagues with are like Muhammad Ali in terms of avoiding a punch in his early years before the suspension even. When I talk about Gail Sayers or Barry Sanders in terms of reading leverage in the open field. But the number of athletes in any sport who are at the Jackson Ali level is so small.
Yeah, it is. And I'm glad you made that comparison to Ali and Jackson, because they are two prominent athletes in their field that really changed the game. I think we hadn't seen a heavyweight that could move the way Ali could in his weight bracket. So that's one thing I will say about Lamar. He continues to break boundaries, and he really did change the quarterback position. I think the number of athletes that have come in since we drafted him have been, you know, dual threats, and you're not seeing a lot of pocket passes anymore. And it's no.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, coincidence that has been trending with the emergence of Lamar Jackson. So, yeah, you're not going to find a lot of athletes that can do what Lamar Jackson can do. And for him to be able to do that with the space in mind to really build upon the other 10 guys in the field to really maneuver them in positions both pre-snap and post-snap is really outstanding.
Let's talk about some other things. Lamar Jackson again led the league in time to throw at 3.14. Not a good thing for less mobile quarterbacks. It's a great thing for Lamar in terms of creating value late in a play. Very misunderstood statistic, but basically when Lamar Jackson's leading the league in that category, things are right. It's the simple way to say it. He's doing the good things.
Yeah, I wonder, and this is a good point that I want to bring up, how do you feel with the play of the offensive line in regards to what Lamar Jackson, do you think Lamar Jackson is masking some of the deficiency of this offensive line? And do you think that potentially the Ravens are seeing that and want to move in a different direction? Do they want him maneuvering out of the pocket as quickly as he does because he knows the pressure is coming? Is what I'm thinking about as the season unfolds for 2025. I wonder what the Ravens decide to do in that regard. I know they're going to have some decisions to make with the cap space, but I think in the offseason they may need to tweak some things a little bit because even though, as you mentioned, that number is lowest in the league, I would love to see Lamar Jackson have some more time to just dissect the team with the pass in the pocket without having to maneuver and create opportunity.
This is a point on which people don't completely understand the statistic. Mm-hmm. It's a Jackson choice statistic to hold the ball for longer that is creating the 3.14. It doesn't have anything to do with the offensive line. I mean, the offensive line is not allowing sacks right away. That probably contributes to it. But the main thing that's contributing to a 3.14 time to throw is a number of 9-second throws that are contributing significantly to that average. So that's really where the difference comes in. But I do think that the offensive line needs to be a better pass blocking offensive line. So I think they do need to figure some of that out. They are slightly complementary in the fact that they allow pressures as opposed to finishes in the form of quarterback hits or sacks. Stanley has been very big about this in his career. I find him to be a player who's frankly a little overrated as a pass blocker because I think he allows the cone to be imperiled fairly frequently. But on the other hand, it's extremely symbiotic with Jackson because Jackson works very well with that. He doesn't lose his focus downfield. He moves away from that kind of pressure very well. And so by minimizing hits and sacks, I think Stanley has done a very good job. And the Ravens overall are good at that. Lindebaum gives up a lot of pressure right up the middle that is probably less costly to Jackson than it could be. McCary has allowed some of that. As a group, it's not a great pass blocking line. Hopefully they can get somebody they really like who can improve the pass blocking level and also not take a step back in terms of run blocking. Where again, I think it's a good run blocking line. I don't think it's a great run blocking line either. I think it's just okay. The thing I'd like to see is a guard, a big guard again on the left side.
I think that's where I was going with that. I wouldn't be remiss if I wasn't disappointed if they brought Patrick McCary back for a second go around with this unit as a whole. I think that there is some opportunity to improve that position. And I think that helps out Tyler Lindebaum as well moving forward. But depending on who is the left tackle, I think Lamar will be good to go. I agree with you completely with what Ronnie Stanley does on the field. He does allow a lot of pressure, but again, Lamar Jackson's so good at, you know, climbing that ladder, escaping it, and giving Ronnie Stanley time to reaffirm position and all of that stuff. So that they work very well together. So I'll be interested to see if the Ravens move on from Ronnie Stanley and move Rosengard into that left side, if that synergy continues.
Yeah, it will very well could, because I think the big question about Rosengard is anchor. Yeah. It's not Mirror. Mirror is excellent. It's anchor. And I think he could be a similar left tackle to Stanley. I'm not based on the year they had where he was completely helped the entire year. I'm just not convinced that he's ready to go there yet. We'll see. We may see out of necessity. And we'll eventually see, I'm sure, at some point in his career that he moves over to the left side. But some guys are better suited for that right side for a lot of reasons. For one thing, Jackson can see the pressure better, obviously, on that side coming from his non-blind side. Yeah. But he there's something else going on there, is that a lot of teams play with a bigger right tackle to try and get run push there. I don't think the Ravens really need that. It'd be interesting to see bring another big guy in next to Fa'alele. If you had Orlando Brown over there, would it be a big advantage? But I think also the Ravens have to figure out where they're not going to spend money. And right now, not spending money on a couple offensive line positions would be good, which means you have to go to the draft to get that talent.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think the draft is where they go for it. I would much rather them focus on the defense. I think Eric Costa made some mentions about, you know, adding some safeties to really help.
Yeah,
with the disruption there. So yeah, I think the focus might be on the defense, but I'd be happy if they added a guard there. I'd be okay with the big guard at the left side to really create this unit that continues to grow as they build around Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be a guy who has to play right away. I think they Voorhees had one good game late in the year that indicates to me he's probably the guy they'll start with in 2024. But you know, they may switch riders. Voorhees may get hurt. Falele may get hurt. They may need a replacement. I do think the one thing, and this is I think this is going to really upset some people, but I think Falele is a stone cold lock to be the starting right guard. Come the season opener. His last five games are simply outstanding, and I'd be very surprised if the Ravens replace him. In fact, I think they'll probably try and extend him before the season begins.
Oh yeah, fans, you might be upset about it, but I think if you watch the film, you wouldn't be. I think one of the knocks on Daniel Falele and the ones that I had was that could you afford to allow him to grow in that spot as the season progressed? So in the beginning of the season, you knew he was green and he was learning the position, and could you afford to allow him to learn and grow as you try to obtain a spot in the postseason? And once you got that postseason lock, you did your job as a coach. You gambled, you rolled the dice, and you succeeded. And Daniel Falele has been phenomenal in that. He's exactly what the Ravens wanted in that spot. He has some deficiencies to his game, obviously.
Yep.
But what he brings to the table is right there in front of you. Defensive linemen do not like dealing with Daniel Falele. He's just a big guy that can cause some problems. I think in the offseason, I think he'll work on his footwork. How much of that you'll see in 2025 remains to be seen. That's up to him and his camp. But I think, yeah, he's not going anywhere. Daniel Falele is that right guard for the foreseeable future. And because he's leaning towards the end of that current contract, they're going to have to extend him. It's just one of the things they have to do. And because he has struggled early on, that extension could come pretty soon. They could use this as a way to get him in on the cheap and have him grow and an offense and really gain value with that contract.
Right. There's certainly divisible benefit on the table. And Falele would not want to have a regression season. He just saw it happen to Brandon Stevens, and yeah. Stevens cost himself a ton of money this year. And Falele wouldn't want that to happen to him. I think both sides are highly incented to get a deal done. And we finally see some of the physicality out of Falele we really like at the end of this year. The guard market was extremely frothy last year in terms of some outstanding guard contracts being given out, but that's not the long-term history of the National Football League in terms of where you want to spend a lot of money under a cap environment. So I think that pretty good chance that Daniel Falele stays a Raven beyond 2025 would be my call right now.
Agreed. And you know, we talked about guards, and we got a guy, Marshall Yonder, that could be heading to Canton, but one of the things that are kind of knocking his potential induction is because he played a guard position that is not very highly sought after in the NFL. So, you know, it's one of those things I would love Yonder to get in. I hope he does. I think he will. But it's one of the knocks on him is because the guard position isn't really viewed as highly as that tackle spot. So,
yeah, he's a certainty to get in at some point. Sure. Whether that's 6 hours from now or not is a question. Yonder, okay, we'll go on a little tangent here. The offensive line in general has benefited tremendously from the PFF era, where we have weekly grading of offensive line play that's relativized across the league. The All-Pro and Pro Bowl voting in past years before PFF came along is an absolute disgrace in terms of the same guys winning it for multiple years in a row. And, you know, basically, if you're an individual sports writer, you only see 14 football games a year. You don't go back and watch a whole bunch of all 22 on offensive line. And, you know, people didn't do that. The all 22 expectations of sports writers were not very high, in particular, the guys who were doing a lot of this voting. And so you had 8-9 consecutive years. Well, it's understood now that players have bad years at places like guard. And there's a lot of continuity. You a player like Yada is terrifically consistent in his approach and generally was very good at it. But he is a beneficiary of the PFF era that he's going to be recognized in and will likely go. And I think it could happen tonight. I'm, you know, is it 25 or 30% for him to go? Probably. It's probably not 70%. Terrell Suggs for sure goes tonight, by the way. Absolute sure thing. I'll be shocked and upset if he does not go tonight, but I think Marshall Yanda will go either this year or in the next couple.
Jared Allen's the one thing that's got me a little worried about him. Jared Allen hasn't got in yet. And I still think, I mean, the resume speaks for itself in regards to Terrell Suggs. I think he's leaps and bounds above him in terms of what he's putting on paper. But I think I'm a little nervous for Suggs as well. I would love for both of them to get in. They're both deserving. They will both get in one day, but I would love for them to be first ballot Hall of Famers. Of course, if you're listening, you know the answer to this already. But, you know, for us recording this right now, we're waiting in anticipation to see what happens.
All right. I'm laying my prediction out there, Bear. I think the other thing about Suggs, which also he can be a beneficiary of the PFF era to a lesser degree, he is a generational talent as a run defender. And then you throw in the 132 sacks or whatever he had and all the playoff sacks and all the postseason stuff that he did. And playing, you know, 17 straight years for the same team. It just doesn't happen. It's just too many foreground sceneries, including the defensive player of the year. And there's all the background scenery anyone would ever need in terms of good sack totals on a by year basis. And then you've got this enormous thing that the Ravens, of that era, were the greatest run defending team in terms of a 15-year stretch in NFL history. And he's got to get some credit for that too, because he was the single most significant performer in that group.
Yeah, he was phenomenal, and he very underrated as a run defender. A lot of people look at the sacks and go, okay, well, you're sacking Ben Roethlisberger twice a year, you're sacking Carson Palmer twice a year, so that's what we know him for. But man, he was such a stalwart when it came to stopping the run. That, and he was a huge part of that run defense, and I think that's why, to your point, he's going to get a couple of nods, and again, we're hopeful that he gets in the can and in his first try, and he's definitely deserving himself because he's just an all-around great player. And the way the Ravens drafted him, I don't think they drafted him in the, I remember, he wasn't the top five draft pick. Wish we would get another pass-rushing, run-stopping stud in the lower portions of the draft, but it's very hard to do. Ravens got it done.
Suggs was 10th overall, so he was involved in that sequence where Minnesota acquired the 7th pick. Was trading the 7th pick, I think, or thought they were. And they somehow didn't get it done. Yes. And they thought they were trading it with the Ravens. And then they end up drafting a good player, Williams, a defensive lineman. And Carolina got Jordan Gross, who was good. And then Byron Leftwich also got drafted in that group. So that was the booby prize. And then the after all those three picks were finally made, Terrell Suggs was still there. And the Ravens went up and got him. So great pick. I know he was very high on their board. Is everything I've ever heard about that year. And I don't know if he was second or third or where, you know, where he was, but he would have been like Kyle Hamilton. It was a kind of a run to the podium situation.
Was that the year they drafted Kyle Bowler as well, if I'm not mistaken?
They traded back into the first round to get Kyle Bowler. And then that pick in 2004 ended up being Vince Wilfork. So,
I think that's why Isaac Newsom said he'd never do it again. And he only did it one other time, and that was he didn't trade a first round draft pick in the upcoming year, but he did trade up back in the first round to get Lamar Jackson. That was phenomenal, but he didn't have to give up a next year's first round pick, which he said he'd never do again. I'm sure Eric Costa was following suit with that.
So you have two twos, and the Eagles were really eager. I mean, they made it known this pick's for sale here. We, you know, it's the 32nd pick here, and you know, we want to get rid of it. We know it has 5th year option value. We don't need it. We just want you to pay us a premium for it. And it was 2 second round picks was all they had to give up in the end for moving up to get Lamar Jackson. I want to talk about one particular stat for Lamar that I don't think is broadly known. And that's something I call FNTP. It's a stat of my own development, but it's forced not to pass. And it's how many yards per play does Jackson get when he is forced not to pass? So there's two components to that. One is sacks, which for whatever reason are separated from runs that go beyond the line of scrimmage by even a yard or two. So sometimes I refer to a play as a sack plus two or a sack plus three. When you get off the field on third down because you force the quarterback off the spot, you happen to tackle him 2 yards past the line of scrimmage instead of 2 yards behind it, it's really effectively a drive-ending sack you've got on that play. but includes all of Jackson's scrambles, which includes some, obviously some phenomenal runs in there. So Jackson had 47 scrambles this year for 414, which is a terrific total, by the way, and 23 sacks allowed for minus 149, which is not a lot of sacks, and it's not a lot of total yardage either. So his overall, when you combine those two, he had 70 for 360 something, but his 3.8 was his FNTP. That's a phenomenal number. That is just extraordinarily high. And the 1 year he had that was higher was in 2019, when he's incredibly at 5.6 yards per play when either forced to scramble or being sacked.
He was probably scrambling a lot that year, if I had to to guess. He was probably moving. But that's, again, a force not to pass. So that's a situation where he's trying to throw the ball, but he's allowed to run. Man, that is a phenomenal for a Lamar Jackson. And, again, that's one of the reasons why the Ravens got him. He's very good at creating positive yardage in situations where it may not be that case. So, I think, again, that speaks to what Lamar Jackson is able to do. I don't think there's any quarterback in the history of the game, maybe Michael Vick, comes to mind as a guy who's creating positive yardage in those situations. I think Ben Roethlisberger,
Michael Vick, took
really
a lot
job.
Of sacks.
Oh yeah, he took a lot of sacks. I remember I used to love playing Michael Vick when he was a Falcon, when he played the Ravens, because I knew the Ravens were going to do a good job of getting to him, and he gave the Ravens a lot of opportunities to get sacks on. Lamar Jackson is not that guy. He is going to try his best to create positive yardage, much to the detriment of himself in the divisional round in the playoffs, where he tried to scramble and throw the ball, and that was a fumble, and that's just him trying to make something happen. But for the most part, Lamar Jackson is great at doing that. And I think I'm hopeful to see more of that. I think I'm more concerned, 32 years, 33 years of age. Is he still that quarterback? Is he going to have to be that guy that stays in the pocket a little more? That remains to be seen. But I think he's done a great job of keeping his body right, tight, you know, low weight, so that he's able to be that maneuverable quarterback.
That will really be the question, though, is how much of Lamar's effectiveness and how much can he make up for it with savvy leverage reading at that age, as opposed to losing a lot of his skills because he's not as dangerous a runner. But it is coming. And we saw, in fact, some drop-off in terms of his speed when he was carrying a little bit more weight. That tells you there's a lot of maintenance involved in making sure he stays where he is. By the way, Michael Vick sacked on 8.94% of his snaps career, and Jackson is at 6.91%. So it's a big difference in terms of percentage of plays that go for a sack. Let's talk about 2024 and looking forward to what Jackson needs to do to this. And I have a handful of things, but maybe we just alternate and tell me one thing you want to see different or something you think he has to work hard to maintain in 2025 as opposed to 2024.
Okay. Well, it's such a difficult thing because I'm trying to separate the performance he had in the Bills game to what he's done throughout the 2024 season. I would love to see him do a better job of throwing the football down the field. I know the offense doesn't really dictate that approach because of what they're able to do. They're essentially fooling the defense on every snap. And are you taking advantage of that misdirection for the opposing defense? The best way to do that is on short and intermediate routes. So, but I would love for him to kind of develop a rapport with Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers. Not Zay Flowers because he's more of an intermediate guy, but Rashad Bateman and whoever else he gets in the offseason, maybe even Tez Walker on those deep routes. I would love to see that.
Yeah, that's a good one. We talked about it a little bit earlier. I'd go with on-time throws. I'd like to see more of those. And I don't want to see it just for the sake of it. I want to see it because I think it forces the defense to be further conflicted in terms of what they do. So you increase Bateman's value specifically as a route runner and what he can do in terms of wiggle at the top of the stem and forcing a defensive back to make the wrong move. You increase that value if you're willing to make an on-time throw to him. But to do so, you're giving up on some of the other value that Lamar gives you. But again, it's just like having a spread of receivers. In this case, you're having a spread of methodology or a spread of scheme to put that additional fear in the opponent. And that's what I would like to see if I had to pick one thing about him playing the position differently. And I've got other things I want him to be better at, but that's I think one of the really big ones.
Yeah, I think also I would love to see him improve. I think he did improve in 2024, but it's outside the number throws. I think he still has some, you know, refinement to his footwork to work on. I still think he's leaps and bounds better than he was in previous seasons, but I think continuing to progress in that regard will do well for that defense, because, I mean, opposing defense, because it really forces him to defend all corners of the field. But I think if he were to improve in that measure just a little bit more, it'll look a little better for a stat line, that is historically great. I mean, I'm nitpicking here. I'm trying to find one or two things, but that'll be one.
I mean, for one thing, I hope Ravens fans are realistic about this, that it's just, he's not going to be able to repeat the 2024 season. And I said the same thing after 2019. And in fact, he has repeated it 6 years later, 5 years later, right, in terms of being as good a quarterback. But I think the chance of him actually repeating the season he just had is virtually non-existent. So it's going to have to be a matter of becoming more efficient at a couple of things, dealing with some of the things defenses take away from him, and dealing with some of his own loss of effectiveness from a historic season. I mean, he's the fourth highest QB rating of all time. He's going to regress to a level, you know, to a more average Lamar Jackson career level, at the very least. And not to mention the fact that he really hasn't been hurt the last 2 years. So not in a significant way anyway. So if that were to happen, that would obviously force a significant and you know, fairly immediate regression, I would think, in terms of his stats.
Yeah, and that's very true. I think we need to be a little less optimistic with this. You know, again, how are you going to duplicate this historic, you mentioned fourth best passer rating of all time? I mean, he's not going to duplicate that, right? I mean, he could. I mean, they never say never, but the likelihood of that is very slim. So we shouldn't deem a lesser output in 2025 as a failure, but we should just appreciate the season he's had this year and hope that the little refinements in his game takes away some of the loss of explosive, you know, Lamar Jackson-ness in 2025 and beyond.
I'll read you my list of what I had on this exact same show a year ago of what I wanted for 2024 improvements. And we'll see if he made it on these. The first was, I wanted to see better pace, to relay the play more quickly, get the team in the line of scrimmage quicker, and deny defensive substitution, among other things. But also, there were many other benefits of that this year, but I think for certain he achieved that one.
Oh yeah. Without a question, I think that might've been his most glaring improvement, is his ability to, you know, quickly decipher the play and understand everything that's going on in the line of scrimmage. I mean, that was a phenomenal improvement, and shout outs to his quarterback coach and Tom Monken for helping him make that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think read the defense better at the line of scrimmage, check plus from my thing. I think he did a better job of doing it himself. He did a better job talking himself through the problem. And I think he adjusted other players. Probably the lesser component of how he improved there was adjusting other players to be on the proper side he wanted and whatnot. Much less of Lamar Jackson being confused about the play call at the line of scrimmage, I think, too, this year.
Oh yeah. Check. I mean, it was phenomenal. I think Patrick Mahomes had that issue too. In his first 2 years in the league, he was really just doing it based off of talent. And as he got acclimated in the position, he started being very good and also deciphering what the defense was doing. And so Lamar Jackson took that step this year, and that's why he's continuing to be great. And that's why I'm a little more optimistic than most about him being able to get close to his performance this year, because of his ability to read what the defense is doing at the line of scrimmage.
It's been definitely a huge area of improvement. Audibles would go into that, by the way. I've got one more where I think worked, and that's find the most effective way to lead. He's had some maturity issues on the field before, the punting the football incident, some of the ways he reacts after a delay of game penalty. You just, comportment is important, and it's particularly important from the player everybody's looking at. You want the offense to know that, and you don't want the defense to see it in terms of a frustration with his own teammates about what's going on. And a lot of it is on the teammates. The teammates have let him down in some way. He gets pissed off, and you know, the punting the football on the delay of game that he did, that was something that can't happen again. But generally speaking, he's got an outstanding personality. People really love Lamar for all the things. Particularly, this was more apparent early in his career. But they want to be led by him, don't do anything to reverse that, you know, with on-field behavior or childish things that, that you do. I think that, I think that really took a step forward in 24, more than we've seen before.
I agree completely. And I think Joe Flacco, you know, we were spoiled by him, his demeanor on the field, Joe Cool, always, you know, ice cold, win or loss and all of that. And a lot of fans got rubbed the wrong way by that. They thought, okay, he doesn't care as much. And then the opposite way, you have Lamar Jackson, who seems like he cares so much, but that can also be a detriment for the opposing defense, seeing you have that wavering emotion, and also for your opposing, for your teammates who want to see you succeed as well. And they feel like they're being disappointed by you. So I agree. I think that he did a much better job this year. And, you know, that just comes with age. You know, you get older, you get wiser, you understand the situation in front of you, and you learn how to lead men. And that comes with, you know, unfortunately, practice. And, you know, you don't just, you're not experience. Born a leader. You know, you grow and become that leader. So I like that. I saw that from Lamar this year.
I'll give you a great Joe Flacco game. That was the 2011 comeback at Pittsburgh when they had to go 92 yards in 2.5 minutes. And he drove up the field. Eventually, Torrey Smith caught the game-winning touchdown in the right corner of the end zone. Well, about four plays before that, he tried to hit Torrey Smith in the left corner of the end zone. Ball was there. Collinsworth, the way he called it, is catch has got to be made. It is not an easy catch, but this is a you know, a championship moment. They need to that catch has simply got to be made. And the way it was always referred, you didn't see Flacco get upset on field, and he didn't generally do that. But the way it was talked about after the fact is it's just like, okay, next play. And they went right back to Torrey Smith. And you know, after trying some other things, they went right back to Torrey Smith four plays later, got him the football, and he scored the game-winning touchdown. So that's a not destroying Smith's confidence somehow with a reactionary, you know, something or other was a great thing.
Yeah, and I remember that specifically happening. And Joe was always that type of guy. Next play. It is what it is. Just going on to the next play. And so the team definitely gravitated towards that, and it helped Torrey Smith a bunch. And I remember that catch. It was so good. Love it when we beat the Steelers, by the way. I love it, especially in those big moments. So definitely appreciated that. And Lamar has those moments as well. He's not really thinking about the next play, but just the frustration on his face. You see he's very animated. Definitely a lot like, you know, the receivers out there in the past. But I love it. I like it. And I think the Ravens gravitate towards it. You just want to see more of a stoic nature and more of a, you know, a demeanor where, okay, we're rallying the troops more so than, oh, I'm disappointed, but let's get it in the next play.
I give you one other area where I think he needs to improve. And this is not just him. This is the coaching staff. It's probably, most times I don't blame any offensive play call stuff on Harbaugh directly, but Harbaugh's got to be an oversight on this particular area, is in milking the clock when it's appropriate. And we go back to that AFC divisional game. The Ravens' chance to win that game after the likely sliding grab in the end zone, even had they made the two-point conversion, was probably still about 20%, because they had to survive the possibility of a game-winning field goal drive from Josh Allen, and they then had to win the game in overtime. So it would have been a hard exacta ahead of them, even after the two-point conversion that they didn't make. So really a hard trifecta to hit. And the problem with that was they didn't run the football. They didn't try and go down in bounds. They didn't try to manage the clock. And this is something, it has not been a strength of the Ravens ever. And I don't think it's a strength of a lot of Ravens teams, but just milking the clock down to the end, it cost them a game in 2016 at Pittsburgh, which is enormous game. The Juszczyk scored, gave when he could have gone down at the 1 yard line, say, or anywhere inside the two would have been fine. But then Roethlisberger drove the Steelers down the field for the immaculate extension that scored the game-winning touchdown. That was a mistake that shouldn't have happened. It happened again effectively in this game, and it's whitewashed in a way by the fact that the Ravens missed the two-point conversion. But it wouldn't have been whitewashed if they had. It would have been a serious problem if they'd have scored too quick.
Yeah, and I agree. And again, I chuckled when you mentioned it, because this has been a problem for the Ravens throughout the entirety of their existence. I mean, I'm even going back to the Brian Belichick days. It's just, they just don't have the wherewithal to get it together. And we've talked about it time and time again. It's been harped on more John Harbaugh, and that's probably because, you know, John Harbaugh is winning more and these games mean more. But yeah, I think Lamar Jackson needs to take onus on himself too, because he's the guy on the field calling the play. So I think he needs to have the wherewithal to understand the situation and time management to really get the snap done closer to the zero mark as opposed to the 10-second mark.
It's that. It's also the response to the play call. So if Monken comes in and goes red, right, 60, you know, and it's just a formation, and get the line of scrimmage quickly, he should be asking, is this a no-moss play? You know, is this a play where we're not scoring? Is this a play? Should we run the ball here, Todd? Should I check to a run, Todd? You know, he could say all of those things during the time he has before that communication is cut off. And it's important for him to be part of the responsible, you know, group for that decision. Yeah. If he says it, by the way, on the headset loop, also Harbaugh can react to that directly. He can kind of overrule in that respect, but there is chatter going on. I don't know what the rules are for radio silence. I'm sure Monken doesn't want to be talked over in terms of when he's giving the play call, but there's also analytics discussions going on and whatnot. And I don't know what the rules are for when that has to occur, when that communication has to occur to say, hey, we want to get this first down on two downs and you need to do A and B and C and D. I don't know where those discussions come up about any math involved in football.
I got to assume it's got to be early, because sometimes when the Ravens are getting to the line and they're almost 2 seconds before, and it's not because they're trying to muck the clock, it's because they're really just running out of time to get the play call in. But yeah, I got to assume it's early on for them, and I think they do it fairly often. I wouldn't be surprised, because John Harbaugh does routinely have analytics as a part of his game plan. It's worked to some success here for the Ravens in recent years, so I wouldn't be surprised by that. But to your point, I agree with you 100%. Lamar Jackson is part of that group. He's the last guy who has the final word before the ball is snapped. So I think he is a part of that. And I think that's something that the Ravens need to address in 2025, because as you mentioned, if the Ravens get that 2-point conversion, Mark Andrews catches the ball and, you know, we're tied and we're excited with the minute and some change to go in the game. Josh Allen's still a phenomenal quarterback, and he still has the opportunity to at home go in and get that field goal. So to your point, yeah, the Ravens need to get that squared away, because that'll have been another heartbreaking loss, but for a completely different reason. Of course, it's whitewashed with the Mark Andrews drop, but to your point, it is an area of concern.
Now, we've spent an hour and 14 on Jackson. We owe 45 seconds on the other quarterbacks, Josh Johnson and Devin Leary. Leary, a sixth-round pick. Johnson, an ancient journeyman quarterback now. Is there a reason for the Ravens to move on and find a new backup quarterback in 2025?
I think so. I think we mentioned that Lamar's been healthy for 2 years. How much of that do we expect to happen in year three? Of course, if it's a catastrophic injury that forces him to miss the postseason or miss the regular season or miss the rest of the season, the Ravens aren't going to the playoffs. They're not making the championship run. So, but if you're needing one or two games to have a serviceable quarterback to really help you get a one or two to keep pace with the Chiefs and the Bills and the Bengals or what have you, then you need to get a decent quarterback. So I think they need to make a move for one. I'm not sure. They're not breaking the bank for one. You're not getting a top-tier quarterback, and I don't think you're getting a rookie either. But I think you could find somebody else in that regard. Of course, I think you want to keep in that skill set of the Josh Johnson, Lamar Jackson, kind of a mobile quarterback. I think Devin Leary, I still don't understand why they drafted Devin Leary. Right. Maybe they see something in him that I don't, but I don't understand the position that they put themselves in with that. But I will hope that the Ravens do make a move for another quarterback.
I think if they're talking about getting another mobile quarterback, it will probably be a draft pick. If they're talking about getting a change of pace quarterback, which is what Leary was, then it's you know a pure pocket passer. Then all options are on the table if they wanted to do that. But I don't see them going out and getting a $6 or $8 million backup quarterback. Period. I think that. I don't think this team really can make use of that in the same way, because I think basically the season is over when Lamar Jackson is hurt. And we saw that with Tyler Huntley, who's not terrible. And I think the same would have been true if you had instead had Tyrod Taylor at that point.
What about Justin Fields? Justin Fields is a guy he may not be available for the Pittsburgh, depending on what they do with him. But yeah, I don't think they spent $8 million on a QB. There's so much more money to be spent elsewhere. And I just think that even though the backup quarterback position is important, $8 million for a team like this, who are, you know, they're teetering in close to the cap I just think there's more other positions to be spent on other than the QB position.
All right, got one more thing to read. This is from my expectation series, the good and great levels set for Lamar Jackson prior to the 2024 season. Really, really quick. Good. This is a direct quote. Via some combination of run and pass improvements, the Ravens maintained scoring efficiency at approximately 2.3 points per drive. They were actually up over 2.8 points per drive without sacrificing defensive freshness. Jackson's per run efficiency is high when split by scrambles and design runs. Lamar plays 15 plus games, check. And the Ravens make the playoffs, check. And he's there for all postseason games, check. So he met the good standard. Here's the great season. Jackson and the Ravens deliver points per drive of 2.65 or higher, despite significant changes to the offensive line. Got that one. Lamar continues to build trust with more receivers and makes better use of Bateman's route running. Henry and Lamar improve each other's individual run statistics and the Ravens' success with play action. Think that one hit also. Passer rating remains at 100 plus. Fumbles are 7 or fewer. I think he met that. I don't think he had more than 7 fumbles. And the Ravens prove themselves well-built for playoff success and have a playoff run, again, that goes at least to the AFCC. Couple points short there, but otherwise I think the rest of the great season was met. And certainly in a year where he's up for the MVP, it's going to be a great season anyway. That said, I normally set a great season at the 80th percentile of my expectations. So Lamar continues to just, even though we take him for granted in terms of just trying to take a realistic look at where Lamar Jackson might be. He's continually outperformed expectations just year after year.
And at some point we have to ask ourselves, are we the reason why he's having those extreme expectations? That's because we're not expecting as much as we should with this guy. I mean, he is just phenomenal. I mean, I think, after the AFC division round loss, you're harping on it. You're trying to figure out why what went wrong and you're hurt. But when you take a step back and you look at the season as a whole and what Lamar Jackson's able to accomplish, it's quite frankly remarkable. And the sad part about it is in 10 years, he's going to be gone. He's going to retire. And are the Ravens ever going to get a quarterback as dynamic as this guy again? Because he's such a joy to watch. Also he's a decent guy and the Ravens players love him as much as the Ravens fans do. And that's great. But, as a guy on the football field, I mean, this guy is unbelievable. And the stats you mentioned prove it. I mean, the offensive line was in flux at the beginning of the season. He was performing in spite of that. The defense was struggling. A lot more pressure on the back of Lamar. He was competing and excelling regardless of that. So it's just a testament to how great he is. And, again, the coaching staff deserves almost as much credit as Lamar does because they've done a great job surrounding him with talent and putting him in position for success. So shout outs to the Ravens front office, the coaching staff, and of course, Lamar Jackson on another phenomenal season.
Yeah. All right. Well said. I think the one other thing we didn't really hit on is that an extension for Lamar Jackson is coming. Whether it comes after this year or next is really a question. There's some value to not negotiating with the guy after he's won 2 straight MVP awards. But next year, he'll be 2 years from the end of his contract and 2 years away from certain free agency because he doesn't have the ability to, the Ravens don't have the ability to franchise him under the current contract. So they need to get this, they need for cap purposes, for spreading out the cost of Lamar Jackson. I think they need to get this extension done sooner rather than later. I'd really like to see it be this offseason and not next.
I would love for it to happen, but as you mentioned, man, tough time to be a front office GM. 2 back-to-back MVPs most likely for Lamar Jackson. It's going to be tough to get on that table and get something going, but I think they do need to get something done. I would love for it to be this season for cap space purposes, but if not this season, then definitely next season the Ravens will have to. They got no choice. I mean, the contract is built for them to get an extension done sooner rather than later. The Ravens cannot afford to wait on the last minute cap space-wise. It just wouldn't work anyway. So, I do expect an extension to come soon. Hopefully this season. I think Eric DaCosta made mention of it in his presser, but I think this will be the time to do it. Of course, again, as you mentioned, another MVP award definitely puts the ball in the court of Lamar Jackson, and he loves that. But he deserves the money. So get it done, spread that cap space out, and let's build upon this performance of 2024.
All right. Sam, always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can listen to your work and contact you online if they have football questions.
Awesome. Yes. So you can find me on YouTube or Apple or Spotify, Ravens Talk Podcast. We do post every week, talking all things football with the Ravens as the offseason gets in the way. I also do a kind of combination podcast show. It's called AFC North Roundtable, where we meet with other content creators for the Bengals, Steelers, and Browns, and we discuss all things football in that division as well. You can also find me on Twitter at Ravens Talk Pod and Instagram at Ravens Talk Podcast, where I'm always available to talk football, especially my Baltimore Ravens.
All right, Sam. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, February is your month. Please hit me up with your ideas. Had a great one we just recorded on basically restructuring and re-signing a number of the Ravens guys this offseason, how this could be done. Great work by at the NFL analyst. You probably know him as Orange Kool-Aid Drinker, but he did a really good job on it, and it'll post next week. But outstanding stuff that I'd love to see some other shorts like that. His was a 3-part series. If you want to do that stuff, we have time this time of year to do it. But I'm also always interested in 20-minute topics about something you're passionate about the Ravens. Oftentimes that they don't do is how it works out to be, or that you'd like to see, or that you're highly appreciative of, whatever it might be. DM me. They're always open on Twitter. I'll get back to you very quickly when you have an idea for me. Sam, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.